touch my hair. When it's the feelings I wear.
Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show, here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm show producer Imani Spence, and in this next segment, you're going to hear me speak with Shannon Wallace. Shannon is an award-winning photographer in Baltimore who focuses her work on Black people. I found out about Shannon's work from her zine, What It Means to Be Black, which is filled with black and white photos of black people of different ages and walks of life. When I heard she was doing a solo exhibit, I knew I had to speak to her about her work and her process. Her show is entitled Ain't I a Woman and aims to put black women at the forefront. I took a moment to walk through her show at Platform Gallery. How are you feeling today, Shannon?
I'm good. I'm happy that this is happening.
Yeah, so tell me about some of these amazing memes.
So the memes have really been getting me through a lot of stuff, especially with the election and everything. It's like you look on TV, everything's so depressing, but then you look at a meme and it just makes everything so much better, even if it's temporary. But the memes are just kind of, they represent me in the show. You know, I'm a black woman and I'm proud of it. That's so true. There's one meme, black girls from the hood who buy dollar door knockers, get their long nails done for cheap at the nail salon down the block, who wear $20 wigs, who find that party outfit from Rainbow, who rock all this bright lipstick, who shop at the beauty supply store. They are culture. I believe that's so true because I see that culture is being appropriated so much by people who don't even have to live like that, people who don't have to shop at Rainbow and people who don't have to buy $20 wigs. So that meant a lot to me, but also that was me growing up. I used to shop at the beauty supply store and wear fake nails. And then the next one, if they make sexy clothes in my size, I'm going to wear it. I think about plus size women and how I had a conversation with a guy about like how women shouldn't wear certain things. And I'm just like, dude, women can do whatever they want, regardless if it makes you uncomfortable or not. You just kind of got to get with the program. So these three memes kind of like represent how I'm feeling and represent a big part of me. But the show, the idea came from some stuff that my friends was going through. I know a lot of women who have been like assaulted, sexually assaulted, and disrespected on a daily. Me, I go through sexual harassment against men, so it's just like with all these things happening, I can cuss about it, I can fuss about it, but what do I do to actually put black women on the forefront other than conversation, other than a status or a tweet here and there? So what do I do? So this is how the exhibit kind of came about.
That's awesome. And I think that's what really shows, especially for the type of work here in the exhibit, but then also the work that you've done online too, talking about like blacks and blues, and also the work that you've done surrounding what it means to be black. So kind of tell me about how that informed this work.
So with blacks and blues and the zine, I wanted to make sure that I have different types of blackness, basically. We're monolithic. We have these multidimensional lives, so why not explore them all? So black children, black grandparents, black mothers, fathers, black trans women, black trans men. So, you know, what does blackness look like? What is blackness? I think that for us to move on as a race, we have to understand our sameness and our differences, and I try to create photography and content that can somehow help that, can enforce that, you know, and just to show us how we look and how beautiful we are.
Tell me about this piece that I'm sitting in front of now.
So a lot of these I don't name, so I don't really have many titles, but I'll describe it. It's the picture with the mannequins with the weave ponytails that are really long. So I went to New Orleans in January, and I went to the hair supply store, the beauty supply store, and it was beautiful. I spent like 2 hours in there, and I spent like $80 in there because when I went in there, I felt like I was reliving my teenage years again. But I was just so amazed at the different types of hair, the different hairstyles, the different wigs. I mean, Chinese slippers, I mean, hats, baby fat hats, like little jewelry. I mean, I saw so many things in the beauty supply store. So I started taking pictures. I was more so just amazed by, you know, it being so familiar to me, you know, like it just sparked some type of ideas. Cause I didn't know for the show, I didn't know what I was going to have in the show, but I knew once I came in here that this was, once I went to the beauty supply store, that all the pictures that I took was going to be a part, and that that part of my exhibit was going to be remembering the beauty supply store, remembering the rainbow, remembering the women, including myself, who shop here, who have to shop here. And what I'm really aiming for is the fact that, you know, like how people, when you think about Black women, you immediately think about the aesthetic. But yeah, we look good with our door knocker earrings and our weed ponytails, but take a deeper look. Why do we shop here? You know, like, because this is only what's available. Why do we shop here? Because we don't have any money. Some of us own welfare. Some of us get food stamps. Some of us just don't have it enough to shop at a Louis Vuitton or go to a Towson. So we make the best of our situation, and that's to go to the beauty supply store, buy some hair for $10 and go get some dollar door knocker earrings. They're going to break, but you're going to look good for that second. So,
yeah, that's really important too, because I think about, like, for me, I always dropped to the beauty supply store because when we were younger, there were no hair care in like Target. You know, now you can go to Target and you can get like Shea Moisture. Mm-hmm. But before, you couldn't do any of that. And also, when I was younger, my mom didn't know how to do my hair. So we'd go to the beauty supply store, and someone at the beauty supply store would be able to know how to do those things. Exactly. And I think that type of community, the type of like camaraderie, is really almost missing when you kind of take it out of the beauty supply context. And it's worrisome, and it's like great because now we can go anywhere to get hair stuff, but really, like, what are you really missing? You know, you can't ask that woman down the street, like, you know, what's the best ponytail for my hair and my head size.
The beauty supply store is literally like a safe haven for all women. You could go in there, hit busted, and nobody even say nothing to you because they know that once you leave here, you're gonna be looking popping.
Exactly. And that's so important. And this is the same beauty supply store from New Orleans.
Yeah, it's the same. All the pictures are from the same beauty supply store. It was like heaven. Whatever heaven's supposed to be.
I believe that heaven is a beauty supply store. I believe that very deeply, honestly. I like this one. Tell me a little bit more about this so this one has, it looks like hair nets around the face, which I think is really a cool aesthetic choice. Tell me about that.
Really, really like this picture. I actually remember taking it, but I remember seeing her from in front of the store, like when you first walk in, and being like, I gotta go look at this, her hair. And I just feel like she has so much personality. The nets over her face, I didn't really like pay it attention. It's not like a really, really like big factor, but it is another reminder of the beauty, the process that has to, that's being taken to wear wigs, to look good, to, you know, have less, but feel like you have everything. But I really, really am feeling her hair, but I like the way everything is kind of like lined up. Like, I feel like that they're a gang.
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like that they're friends. So I've kind of like personified this whole like picture, but this is like one of my favorites here, but I'm really feeling the hair. And I love Black women so much. I love myself so much. And so I pay attention to us, you know, I pay attention to our hair, our nails, and these different things. And this is just such a look right here. Like, I remember that look. I want to say, was it, and Don't Be a Menace, one of the girls in Don't Be a Menace had the plaits, but her hair was shorter. But it's like, you know, like, this is just kind of like reliving Black culture, Black hairstyles, Black life. So I'm really digging this picture right here.
Yeah, and I think so often we hear people are like, you know, why are you mad that white girls are wearing cornrows or this, that, and the other? And it's like, it's not, for me, it's not the specific act. It's the fact that we had to go through so much, and we had to go to these beauty supply stores out in the cut, far from our homes, just to get this, and they can just kind of walk in whatever, and they don't even understand context of it. So I think that that's really something that I liked with this picture, because it's so contextualized. Like, these mannequins could not be white. Like, they could be, but no one would believe that.
No one would, it wouldn't even have the same feel. Like, I feel like that this is actually my homegirl right here, you know? Like, and if the mannequin was white, it would just be like, what are you doing?
Where do you come from? Why do your hair don't look like that?
Yeah, because our culture is just being taken so much, and it's just being taken from people who have it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like us as Black people once again making soulful out of scraps, you know, like, we're making the best out of the little bit that we have, and we looking good and doing it. But now, since it's so trendy, it's just being taken and being taken, and now it's leaving people who actually do these things with really nothing. I had the pictures, like, all right, I'm gonna have the pictures, but then I was like, no, I'm gonna get some mannequins. I the idea started to gradually come as I started to put the show together, like physically. And so I did a lot of shopping in the beauty supply store on Monument Street and in Mont Dormant. I was angry, Mount. I was looking for the real mannequins and not the white ones. And so the first store I went to, he said that he wouldn't sell them to me. So I was like, all right, cool. So I actually went in to go like see about the wigs and everything, because I really don't have that. I've never worn a wig, so I really don't even know how this shit even works.
Right.
But I know it's like one size fit all or something like that. And so I bought the two white styrofoam ones, and I was just like, all right, cool, I'm going to try. But I kind of gave it up. And so I went to Monument Street, and I spent like $100 and something in there, and they was just throwing in free, like, here's a free comb. I'm like, you got some mannequins? And he didn't have the styrofoam one, so he gave me the real one.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, let me get another one. So he sold it to me for $10. They were really, they were really generous. So these came about because I just really wanted to put more Black women, more beauty supply store, more hair. I wanted to just not overwhelm you, but I wanted you to see a Black woman every time you are in here. Every direction you look, you see it.
Yeah.
And so I dressed her up. I put a little choker on her.
Mm-hmm.
The girl that worked at the beauty supply store actually helped me out with the wigs, because I just asked her what she liked.
Right.
But I tried to go for the like natural curly,
yes.
the finger waves. Because finger waves are actually amazing. They just looks like a hard, it looks like a hard hairstyle to like do.
Right, but they're super easy.
So, yeah, exactly. So I did the finger waves, then of course the straight hair. And then for the last one, I was looking for like the near long cut, because that was just revolutionary.
Iconic.
Like, yeah, that was just iconic. So, and then just, I just tried to think back and to middle school and high school, what were the girls wearing? What are we wearing now? I actually put some gray hair here for like older women who wear the hair gray. So I was trying to just kind of like have every aspect of hair and like what that looks like, what it feels like. So it gradually started happening as I was putting the show together, and I'm just like grabbing hair from all different places. But I more so wanted to just think back and focus on what I saw growing up and also what I see now, kind of like showing you different pieces of the process. You know, the pictures is the beauty supply store process, but the hair on the ground is the actual like result of getting your hair done, and then the mannequins is just like more of a physical feel of the process. I remember that I got long braids when I was in the 7th grade, and it was so much hair on the ground, and I just thought about so many things when I was putting the show together. It's crazy.
Yeah, you can really tell. It looks really well thought through. And then, okay, so tell me about two things. So the installation here, and then also how you put together this video compilation.
I knew that I wanted to have a visual, some type of montage, but I didn't know what I wanted it to be, and I didn't know if I wanted it to be like a small 30-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started it, but then I stopped because I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to rush the process. I'm just going to let, if I need it, I'm just going to let it come to me. With the montage that's playing, I wanted it to be like some stuff that you would see in a hair salon.
Mm-hmm.
So like this video right here, it's like, if you can't go to Bella Noche's, then where the hell can you go?
It's upsetting me and my home girl, because we feel like we're... If you can't go to Bella Noche's, what the hell could you go?
One of my favorite like videos, I remember seeing it on my phone. So it's like, I think about what we look at on our phone and what we look at on TV, and I kind of like put the two together, because this is also a video from off the internet. But then this video of Hattie McDaniel is something that you would see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought about like, what do we look at on our phones? What do we look at on TV? But making sure that is another... it's another opportunity to see Black women
mm-hmm.
do together. And then the plants, like you always, it's always plants. I
always
plants in somebody's house. So it's just like, you know, like try to make it this home feel, this hair salon feel, but more so a feel that, an environment that feels so familiar.
Yeah, and safe too, because if you think about how many Black women feel like they cannot be safe outside of their own homes, recreating that feeling of home, feeling of relaxation, because you can't be yourself around anybody but your people.
Yeah.
Is really, you can really tell throughout this whole exhibit, and it's, you can tell you put the work in for real.
My surround has definitely played a really, really big part. My surround is in my life growing up played a really big part in the show.
There's such a tendency for people to portray Black women as angry or like kind of fake happy, or even like too glam. Mm-hmm. But this is just kind of a nice like middle ground. And like this person, it's a young girl laying on her elbow while she's doing work. Her hair is half blue, half black, and chunky twists, which look great. Mm-hmm. And she's just doing her work. I like this one a lot.
I always loved her hair, and mm-hmm. she reminds me of me, mm-hmm. you know, growing up. And so I just took the picture and didn't think that I was going to ever use the picture, but I remember referring back and saying, I got this picture of her. The hair fits it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that's such a, like, that's not a rare hairstyle. You see different colors in women's hair all the time, even young girls. The twist, that's a really big thing now. And so, but more so, I wanted to capture here, you know, of course, not only the beauty supply store, but when our hair looks like this, what are we doing? You know, like mm-hmm. what's happening in our everyday lives? You know, I'm walking down the street, I got blue hair. I'm, you know, in class with blue hair, you know, like, so when we go to these stores and when we do these things and when we, you know, fancy ourselves up, what are we doing? And so this is just a window to, okay, my hair looks like this. This is what I'm doing. I'm at school doing my work, and, you know, just kind of like challenging those stereotypes. It's like, you know, like, oh, you got hair like that, you would never get a job here. You got, why your mother let you come out looking like that? You know, so it's like, okay, I got my hair like this. My mom let me come out, and I'm doing what I need to do. Right. And so just kind of like examining how our everyday life, what do we do? And she's clearly, you know, doing her work. And so one of the other teachers had showed her this picture, and she like freaked out, and she's like, OD happy. So she's going to actually come into the school today, going to set up a time where she can come and see the picture. It meant a lot to me that she actually know that the picture's up, and that she wants to see it, just because, you know, like the exhibits, the zines, all the work that I do only works if my community supports me. Mm-hmm. And I know that my community also holds me accountable. And so.
Okay, so then this next half is all black and white photos.
Yeah. When I was curating this, I didn't want it to be just black and white images. I wanted to really like explore the everyday life of working women, taking care of their families, living a life, being with their friends, you know, being with their children. So I wanted to put us on the forefront, but also provide images that depict our every move, you know, like when we're with our friends, when we're with our little sisters, when we're outside the window hanging, talking on our phone. Mm-hmm. So I took this one in Cuba. They were really, really nice. I only speak a little bit of Spanish, but I said to her, Puerto Tamar tu foto, and she kind of did that. She kind of posed like that. Cuban women are really nice. Cubans mm-hmm. are really nice. Like, everybody in Cuba was really nice, and they were so happy to see black women from the States, you know, like, and so immediately there was a language barrier, but we kind of connected on a different level. Like, oh, you're a black woman, I'm a black woman. Hey, let's hug, let's, you know, give right. each other kisses on the cheek, and hey, let's take a picture for, you know, for six. So, yeah, I took this in Cuba. Everybody was really nice, and I just liked how she posed. It kind of like put the twist on the photo, and the fact that the front is like blurred out in the back just mm-hmm. a little, but smiling, it really gives me a real happy moment. And that's what I wanted to focus on, a more happier moment with black women.
Yeah.
I like to like create photos that like kind of like make people critically think. So in this picture, I will always think about, first of all, why is the window in that condition? Mm-hmm. And then second of all, what is she talking about? Why is she smoking? You know, ask mm-hmm. questions. So many questions that you can ask about this picture. You know what I was trying to say.
It reminds me of Ruby Dee and Do the Right Thing, where she's like, because the whole movie, she's in that window.
The whole time.
Yeah, and you're just like, that's just where she is. Like, that's her state of being. That's how she lives. And she's like, and I always think about windows in literature, because that's my background, is always kind of signifying like transience mm-hmm. or transparency, right? Yeah. So like in a lot of literature, black women are in windows to give advice, like you were saying, to be nurturers, to kind of see what's going on in the street, and to be kind of, in some ways, like monitors of what's happening.
I'm thinking about even growing up, I remember someone's mom hanging out the window, looking at the neighborhood mm-hmm. kids play, making sure that we safe. And then be the same one that's cussing us out when we're doing something wrong. So like you said, monitoring us and making sure that we're safe, but also just, you know, being good kids and just kind of like being a mother, you know, being a nurturer. You're not the mother of all of us, but you are the mother of all of us. Right. So Yeah.
Yeah. One of us falls, we all fall.
So this one, I went to Boston to go talk to a theater group who happened to be queer, a queer theater group. And it was really like life changing. They talked about a lot of stuff with their sexuality and their friends and their sexual orientation. And a lot of, they touched on a lot of things that I didn't go through. Mm. But I felt so much of their pain and I just wanted to give them so much love. And so we hung out, we talked a lot, I shared a lot of work with them. We got to know each other on a very personal level, and I happened to take a picture of her. So with the exhibit, I wanted to include transgender women. Mm-hmm. I think that it was only right, you know, like me, I'm trying to work more on, you know, practicing what I'm preaching, but also not only sticking up for women who, you know, are not transgender, but focus on anyone who identifies as a woman, as a black woman. And so it's like, well, it's, this photo kind of is holding me accountable to make sure that I too stick up for transgender women, that I too, you know, do research and, you know, like become allies with them and treat them like their sisters too. So I took that one in Boston, but this one right here, the Muslim woman, it's this was right by Red Emma's. I like to get very personal in people's face when I'm taking pictures. And so I got really close to her and she felt comfortable, but I felt like that she was being herself. Like, you know, when you about to tell somebody, when you tell somebody you about to take a picture, they pose, they try to get their best side, but she just, I think that this exchange, because photography is a really like an exchange a lot of times. And so for her, I felt like that she just kind of like laid back and kind of relaxed and kind of just wanted me to capture the true essence of how she felt. And so these two pictures are actually very, very, very special to me because it depicts not the average black woman. Mm-hmm. You know, like people don't really, I mean, we never hear stuff about transgender women mm-hmm. unless we know them personally mm-hmm. or if it's something.
Or it's violence.
Exactly, right. Or it's violence. And then Muslim women, you know, like I don't really know how Muslim women feel,
right.
You know, about a lot of things. And, you know, like people tend to exclude black Muslim women.
Yeah.
Black women, we're not our own distinct group. You know, like when men talk, black men talk, it's like they're talking for all of us. And then when women talk, which is white women, it's mm-hmm. like they're talking for all women. It's just like, no, we deserve to be our own distinct group. And that mm-hmm. is kind of me also doing that in the show. But these two pictures are very, very important to me because it just highlights women that I'm not even, you know, associated with that much. I don't really know too many transgender women and also too many Muslim women. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do I get closer to them? How do I talk to them? And how do I help restore their voice and tell their story? And also, you know, highlight their lives as well. It's not a life that I'm living personally. You know, I'm not Muslim and I'm not transgender, but you know, how do I also include them? Because they're sisters, mm-hmm. you know, they deserve to be heard just like us.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And then the babies.
So the one in the back, I actually could not wait to show this picture off. They were giving the grandmother hell.
Oh,
like,
man.
But they were so cute. They were just in their own worlds, and she just had to like try to handle each and every one of them.
Yeah.
And so the older one, we started to talk a little bit. She started to ask me about the zine. I was teaching her how the camera worked. So I had a really, really cool exchange with these kids. I love kids so much. This particular picture, I just want people to think about the little girls, you know, like what happens to us little girls when we're growing up, you know, like what happens to us, you know, while we're growing. And so I wanted to highlight black little children, you know, particularly black little girls, because our childhoods are vital. They're so important because it kind of molds us into who we're going to be and how we think and how we treat others and also how we feel about ourselves.
And oh my goodness, another baby. He's so cute.
So I took this in Red Emma's, and that day it's always kids in there.
Yeah.
And I just can't help myself to even, like, I have to talk to someone's baby. I have to, like, hold someone's baby, watch someone's baby when they go to the bathroom, taking pictures of someone's kid. Like, I really like this picture because of the nails.
Ooh,
and I think that it just kind of shows, like, her getting the lint out of his head and then him holding her, I think that it shows a true connection. But also, I think it reminds me of the responsibility that this woman has. She's responsible for this kid. You know, that's why she's getting the lint out of his hair. And he knows that. That's why he's hugging towards her. Because I had initially told her, like, I'm gonna take a picture of y'all. She was like, yeah, come on. And then I took a picture of him. Oh, I was trying to, and he was sitting there giving me the side eye, like, I don't want you taking my picture, but take my picture, like a sneak picture. Like, I'm not gonna look at you, I'm not gonna pose, but I want you taking my picture. And he has like a little tear in his eye because he was scared of this toy that he was playing with. And so this picture was really, it was funny because I kept the entire room, well, half of the room at Red Emma's was laughing because he was being so shady because he wanted me to take his picture, but he didn't want me to take his picture. And so I remember her just being so kind and her being such a nurturer of him, you know, like that's her son and everything. But you could feel the love between them two. And that's why I really wanted to take the picture. But even when I'm looking at this, you can feel the love, you know, just how he is like kind of getting closer to her and how she is just, you know, she has that responsibility to get the lint out of his hair, you know, to change his diaper, to be there for him, to help him growing up. And so, you know, all of these pictures kind of depict some type of responsibility it takes and it has to be, you know, a woman, you know, living in Cuba with your friend, you know, nurturing, talking on the phone, you know, being a transgender woman, having to defend yourself and having to always, you know, be judged, the Black Muslim woman, to always be discluded, you know, to always be silenced in a way, children, Black little girls growing up. So all of these kind of like show some type of responsibility that we have as Black women, you know, as Black children growing up, as people in general, but particularly Black, because, you know, because we don't have it easy at all, you know, and immediately from the womb, we're betted against. So out of all of this stuff, what does it really truly show? And it shows us Black women living in our everyday life and making the best of everything that we can make and being who we are individually and, you know, fighting for our rights and fighting for our lives and fighting to survive. I see survival in all of these pictures.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I even think about like this picture, you're talking about how we think about her being a nurturer, but I almost think about how she's still a human. I think oftentimes we think motherhood, your humanity is now gone. Your humanity belongs to your child. But she has like her leggings on, she's got her boots on, she's got her nails done. Mm-hmm. She's like, you're my son, you're not my everything. You know, mm-hmm. I still have a life to lead. I still have my humanity to protect. And I think that's something that as I've gotten older, I've really noticed that we do to mothers in general. So I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think that we put so much pressure on our parents when we forget that they are humans too. Mm-hmm. You know, mom got to get it too. Mom got to get her groove back and everything. Mm-hmm. And she got to get her nails done and her hair dear and all that other stuff, you know. But that doesn't, and her living her life individually doesn't take away from the love that she has for her son or the responsibility she has as a mother. She just gets to do both. She gets to be a mother and she gets to be a Black woman, her own individual.
Yeah. And really quickly, so you have done a lot of traveling for this exhibit. Like how have you talked about Baltimore when you go away, and then how do you think that like you've carried these experiences from other cities about Blackness into this exhibit?
So I went to New Orleans beginning of January, and then the day I came back to Baltimore, I went to Cuba the next day. So both times I took my zines and I took a shitload of pictures. I took a lot of pictures to both places. And so I take the pictures and I pass them out. I don't even make people buy them. I just randomly give them to people, just so the stories can speak for themselves, just so people can know how we look in Baltimore and how we feel in Baltimore, how we're living in Baltimore. So when I went to Cuba, it was actually amazing because I had a picture of some vacant homes and so many Cubans thought that it was Cuba. Like, this isn't Cuba. And I'm like, nah, this is Baltimore. And they have some Cubans have this perception of what America is supposed to be. And so with the pictures, they're like, oh, well, this kind of contradicts everything that I believe. And I'm just like, yeah, I mean, yeah. And so being able to, like, of course, provide them with imagery, but also explain them. I had one friend, can't think of his name, but he is a barber. He cut hair. He lives in Cuba. We had a 2-hour talk about the images and police brutality because I gave him pictures of, you know, I gave him different types of pictures, but a lot of them show what we go through, you know, people being arrested, you know, like people protesting. And he asks his question, why are they protesting? Well, why does this look like this? And it's crazy that the feedback that I got from Cubans was... It was great, and it really made me feel like that I'm kind of like doing the right thing, you know, because to share these images and to get so much feedback, not only about the aesthetic of the pictures, but to have people really ask questions and really like have their mindsets change. You know, when I gave a lot of pictures to the Cubans of Black women, they asked questions like, oh, this looks like my cousin. This not my cousin, or this looks like, and I'm just trying to show people all over, particularly Black people, that we all, you know, are our own individuals, but we all are the same. We all are part of each other, and we all are fighting to survive.
In your presentations, you like to bring in writers, performers. What does that mean to you to create that kind of community around your exhibits?
For me, it's really, I just want to put the art on the wall, but I want to occupy space, and I know that I can't do that by myself, and I don't want to do that by myself because it's so many people who support me. It's so many people that I love and that I adore and that I look, you know, I look up to. And so the writers, the poets, the whoever, whatever you do, my platform is your platform. If you got something to say, you know, like, please come and say it. I think that community is something that happens. It's something that is appreciated because we don't have that much community.
Thank you so much for listening to my conversation with Shannon Wallace. Her show, Ain't I a Woman, will be up in Platform Gallery until February 25th. Platform Gallery is located at 116 West Mulberry Street and is open from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturdays. Also, on Friday, February 10th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., there will be a panel discussion with Black men and Black women to talk about sexism in the Black community. The conversation is sure to be powerful and informative. Again, that's at Platform Gallery, which is located at 116 West Mulberry Street.
I tell them why you mad, son. Cause doing it all ain't enough. Cause everyone out in my cup.
Thanks again for listening. Coming up next, we have our weekly installment of Soundbites, our series on food, agriculture, the environment, and energy.
I ran into this girl, she said, why you always blame it? Why you can't just face it? Why you always gotta be so mad? Be mad.